Ladies and gentlemen, this is your captain speaking. Please make sure your seatbelt is securely fastened, your tray table is in an upright and locked position, and that you are ready to get weird and think different. Please prepare for takeoff. Is Wednesday. It is September 22nd. We're back with our episode of Destination Different. We just hit 7,000 listens. We have three months till the end of the year, till the end of 2021. 10,000 or bust. 10,000 or bust. I don't know how I'm going to do it. I don't know how we're going to do it, but it's going to happen. It is going to happen. We're putting our all into this. There are roughly 100 days, 3,000 listens. I don't know what that equates to. A couple listens a day. We should be good. I think we can do it. I'm very excited. I feel like we got some momentum going again. I'm reinvigorized. Is that a word? I don't know. I've got some great guests over the past few weeks. I've got a great couple others lined up coming over the next couple. It's just exciting times. I'm excited. I've got a new... Summer's over. Like, you know, the vacation is over. We are back to the grind, back to work, and it truly does feel good. So, we have a great, not one, but two guests on this week's show. They are the co-founders of Smackin' Snacks, Slingin' Sunflower Seeds. We've got Brian and Cole, the two founders of Smackin' Sunflower Seeds on this week's episode. And they are just awesome. So the two of them were college roommates, freshman year, random roommates at the University of Minnesota, got paired up and, you know, became fast friends and very quickly realized that the two of them were both business savvy, entrepreneurial minded, great marketers, great salesmen, and that they wanted to work on something together. They had a few failed projects throughout college. And then one night over a couple of, I like to assume over a couple of beers, but I honestly don't know. They put their brains together and said, you know what? We both played baseball growing up. We both are looking for better alternative to sunflower seeds. And Smackin' was born. And since then, the two of them have built out this company launching in 2019 that has now just grown month over month over month and continues to just keep building and growing. They are insanely talented on TikTok with some unbelievable content, and you can just tell from talking to them that they will turn this direct-to-consumer product into what is sure to be more of a all-encompassing media company. They just have a knack for video creation content and are super, super savvy in that regard as well. So, awesome episode this week. I am super excited for you all to listen to this one. It is a doozy. So, without further ado, let me turn it over to Smackin' Snacks on this week's episode of Destination Different. Let's go. When is Mike Trout going to crack and have some Smackin' Sunflower Seeds?
I mean, I'm hoping it's before 365 days, but, you know, at this rate, who knows?
Yeah, you know, we got some, you know, unique stuff in the pipeline that hopefully will connect us to Mike Trout. So you never know.
Yeah, you'd be surprised who sees stuff on TikTok, even if it's not Mike Trout directly.
So do you guys get, you know, somebody will hop into your comments, a DM, be like, hey, I know a guy who knows a guy who knows Mike Trout. Is that how it kind of goes?
Yeah. We've had quite a few agents or, you know, baseball,
just connected,
yeah, baseball brands, ambassadors, just players themselves, a whole host of, you know, the baseball industry.
And then you have people who like say they know him and actually definitely.
Yeah. You always have the 11-year-old kid that has the aunt that works for Mike Trout
or the mom who, you know, is his personal shipper or whatever it is. Yeah. So. Usually they're just trying to get free seeds.
A lot of people latch on. And is he like the white whale? He's like, if you could get anybody, it's obviously Mike Trout. Like why did you settle on, not settle on, but why was Mike Trout the target for you?
I, I think
simply put, he's the GOAT.
Yeah. He's the best. He's the best alive. And, you know, if you have the best alive eating your product, that's says something.
Okay. All right. I like that. So to go back in time a little bit, you guys were freshman year. Is that right? Freshman year college roommates. And like, so how did that go? One, on just like the personal level of you guys, like getting to know each other and just becoming seemingly friends first before business partners, obviously. But then at what point did it switch of like, oh, we've got to, we want to try and make something, together.
You know, I mean, we were randomly signed as roommates our freshman year. Like we met each other like one time before, like maybe like a few weeks before we moved in. So it was pretty cold feet when we met each other, moved in. And, you know, it was just kind of started as a friendship over the first few months and just kind of grew into more of a, you know, we both realized we enjoyed business and building things. And we kind of got our feet wet in a few different ideas we had that eventually led to Smackin'.
Mm-hmm. And did you guys, like, were both of you entrepreneurial growing up, or, you know, did you have little tiny businesses on the side or start anything else during college, or did you jump right into a Smackin' kind of like the first real tangible thing for either of you?
Yeah, I'd say Cole definitely, you know, lived the entrepreneurial, you know, from right out of the womb. You know, he, you know, you had a lot of, you know, small side businesses. I myself, you know, definitely was business minded from the start. You know, I didn't start a lot of small side gigs. I would do a lot of work for my dad, mm-hmm. Learn from him, and just kind of learn from a lot of his friends that also had companies. So that was kind of my background. And then I met Cole in college, but
yeah, I mean, like when I was a kid, you know, I did baseball cards. So selling those at shows or selling stuff through eBay. You know, also like even like in middle school, I made locker shelves and sold them to my classmates. So always had something going on. And, you know, through high school, I didn't really have like a regular job per se for most of it, because I was just doing odds and ends things that, you know, mm-hmm. paid for me to live, or, you know, have fun in high school.
Right. But, exactly. You can stretch a dollar pretty far in high school.
Yeah. No rent, no real expenses.
What were some of those like failed, but, you know, ideas that you kicked around, the two of you, as you're, you know, living at school together freshman year prior to it becoming Smackin'?
Yeah, you know, two of them were in the, you know, tech industry. You know, they never got past the drawing board, just not our expertise, and something that, you know, we weren't passionate enough to really execute. And, you know, we had a nice experience at this, you know, tech Series A backed startup. You know, we were there
in
for
the area.
Yeah, it's in the Minneapolis area, there for about 8 months, and, you know, both learned, you know, the ins and outs of, you know, growing a startup and, you mm-hmm. know, what works and what doesn't. And, you know, eventually, yeah, we leveraged that into Smackin', something that we knew a little bit better, a little bit close to home.
And
yeah,
something, you know, that was ours too at that point.
Yeah. And, you know, mm-hmm. talk more specifically, you know, yeah, we were trying to do like a tech app. You know, it was mm-hmm. sports related. So, you know, one could, you know, draw pretty close, you know, connection to Smackin', you know, once we failed that and, you know, jumped into Smackin'. But yeah, we just didn't do things that were, mm-hmm. we were motivated, passionate about, and, you know, had expertise in.
Yep. Okay. And so, you know, you guys have a couple of these ideas that you kick around. It sounds like you were working on some for a few months, but then at what point did Smackin', and what point were you like, okay, sunflower seeds, that's it. That's the direction that that we're going in together. Like, was there a moment that you said like, oh, this is, we've got something here that kind of connects with what we both like,
I mean,
or at least something memorable for you?
I think once like the first product was in hand, it was kind of clear that this was like something that could work. Cause like all the other ideas we had to that point were stuff that was like basically kind of out of our reach to develop or to kind of bring to the market. I think once we had like a real physical product from this idea that, you know, we could tangibly sell and mm-hmm. like transaction with other customers, I think that's kind of when, at least for me, the light bulb switch was that this was a viable idea.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think, just seeing the initial reaction, you know, we look back on our, you know, MVP, our very first, and, you know, it was absolute shit. But people still bought it. People, still complimented it. You know, you're not going to please everyone, even on the, you know, national level, you're not going to please everyone. But yeah, once you once we received, you know, positive reaction, you know, just from you know,
sampling,
selling. Yeah, you know, we could tell that this brand, this company, and the product had some, you know, legs to it.
And I'm always curious because, like, there's obviously such a big gap, and I think 99% of the world is probably like, yeah, I've got a great idea, but I don't know how to make sunflower seeds, or I don't know how to do this. Like, for you guys, but where was that? How long did that take from that first, like, MVP for you and the actual, like, origin of the idea? And what were some of those steps that you took to get a product in hands, to get, you know, things packaged? Like, what were some of those early days look like for you?
I mean, I think, like, from ideation to having a physical product, it took about 6 months.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, relatively from the beginning, it was easy on, like, a, you know, in your kitchen, you buy some sunflower seeds, you have some seasoning, kind of roast them and mix them together and see what works. And, you know, you just kind of learn the steps of how to replicate that on a bigger scale.
Mm-hmm.
As you're kind of developing the brand and the product and what you kind of want to do with it on the sidelines. Mm-hmm. So like after, I'd say like all of that together kind of took about 6 months.
So you're literally in your kitchen with like a bag of somebody's knockoff sunflower seeds, like putting spices on them and stuff.
Yeah. I think like I went to Walgreens and they had like a big pound bag. So you buy a few of those at a time and just like, yeah, mix the seasoning on and kind of, that's how we tested at the beginning.
Mm-hmm. That's crazy. Yeah. And so you know, you started doing your own R&D, it sounds like, you know, in your own kitchens and things like that. You're still at school at this time, like you're still living at school at Minnesota and you're in college full time. So how is that balancing schoolwork, being in school, and then like, you know, also trying to get this business off the ground?
School is interesting. I mean, like, kind of once we realized that this was what we wanted to do, school became like more of an afterthought, I'd say.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's times, I mean, I remember specifically like my senior year, there's a few times where I was just like doing assignments and like I was up till 2, 3, 4 in the morning. Cause you know, it was also like you were in person. So you had to attend mm-hmm. class. It's a lot different in a remote world, which we fortunately kind of were able to finish out school on an easy note with mm-hmm. COVID. But the beginning sometimes it was pretty intense, but
yeah,
still manageable.
Yeah. I mean, we're both pretty organized people, so you just have to have your priorities straight. And yeah, sometimes you're going to skip the class to you know, make the meeting with a potential investor or you know, a local entrepreneur that you want to learn from. So yeah, certainly some sacrifices. You know, definitely it depends on, you know, your degree. You know, we weren't getting engineer degrees, mm-hmm. so definitely there was a little more time in the college life just to do and pursue other things.
So. Got it. Okay. And so, you know, when you guys are doing this lab testing, your kitchen testing, and at what point did you bring on a manufacturer right away? Are you trying to like do these handmade for the first, you know, couple of orders that you're doing? Like what was that process like of bringing, or did you bring in outside help to kind of help you start to ramp this thing up a little bit?
Sure. I mean, yeah, essentially we went from, you know, baking in the kitchen to baking in a commercial kitchen to eventually, you know, going with a co-packer. So mm-hmm. on the industrial level. And so, yeah, we've kind of, you know, gone through each stage, you know, both the earlier stages we were in the kitchen, you know, doing ourselves, doing the whole nine yards. So, you know, we certainly know how this product is made, and now it's, you know, our job really is to sell it at this point, now mm-hmm. that we're stepped away from operations.
Got it. Okay. And I'm always curious. My day job is in advertising and branding, and that's a lot of what I do. So where did the name Smackin' come from? Where did some of the logo assets start to come out? You know, I know you have Smack the Gorilla that was introduced. Like, where did all of that ideation come from? Was that totally driven by you two as well?
Yeah, I mean, like at the beginning, just kind of compiled like a list of potential names. And I remember when just the name Smackin' came up, it kind of was like, yep, that works.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, like, I think the name kind of leads to the logo. Like the logo is just it's a basic pow that says Smackin'. And like, you know, when I think of like you use smack or like something smacks as a descriptive, and like, you know, that's kind of like the image that popped into my head when mm-hmm. something smacks, like, oh, it like it tastes really good, like the mm-hmm. flavor is powerful, it's like polished right in your face. Mm-hmm. So I think that's kind of just how the yeah, and it was like in touch with our kind of who we wanted to go after as mm-hmm. our consumers.
So there wasn't like a big debate between you two of like, I like this name, I like this name. We've got 10 different names, can't pick one. It was pretty easy. Smacking is felt good, and it was it.
Yeah.
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 It takes really, a while to get to that though.
Yeah. I mean, it just didn't happen overnight where you had the name and the logo all put together. It's the slow eventual, you know, thing that gets put together. And yeah, it really just exemplified what we want to be as a brand, as a product, as a company.
And did you guys do the logo assets and sort of the like little teaser videos that you did? Are you guys all kind of doing that yourselves as well?
Yep. Yeah. We handle all of the branding and marketing and promotion of the product.
Got it. Wow. You guys, it's pretty, pretty impressive. Was there any, like, I get major, like cartoon, like kind of old, a little bit like old school cartoony type of vibes from that. You guys like big into cartoons, or is like, was that part of the influence of the design work?
Yeah. I love cartoons mm-hmm. and like, eventually, you know, we want that to be part of the brand, is, you know, we want to have like, you know, we want the brand to be more than just food, and we want there to be a media side to this brand, and mm-hmm. love for there to be a, you know, cartoon aspect of this brand outside of just the packaging.
Mm-hmm. And did you guys, as you're starting out, you know, maybe it's at the point where you have product in hand for the first time, or you're starting to get a feel for like, this is the name, this is the mantra that we have, this is sort of what we stand for. Did you ever collectively sit down and you're like, here's the business plan, here's the vision? Or was it more like, we've got a good idea for sunflower seeds, we're going to keep rolling with this? Like, how is that side of like actually sitting down and setting your strategy and visions gone for you?
I can tell you that it happens every week. Okay. You can have one strategy and then it's going to change in a month with new information. So,
or tomorrow.
Yeah. So, I mean, I'd say from the beginning, Cole and I have always really been on the same page on where we want to take this company, and where, what levels we can achieve with it. But you know, from getting there to, it's not going to be a straight road. Mm-hmm. You know, we have, milestones that we want to achieve, whether it's, you know, revenue, whether it's, you know, distribution points. Yeah, there's definitely achievements, but getting there has never been a straight shot. And so I'd say our strategy, it changes weekly, just depending on, what specifically we're looking at.
Yeah. Is there anything that stands out as being drastically changed from when you first started this thing? I assume there's been plenty of like hiccups and road bumps and things that, you know, go differently, but is there anything that is occurring now that you're like, man, when we set out to do this thing 2+ years ago, we never would have thought this was going to be in the plan?
Yeah. Our biggest pivot was because of COVID. So like, we were originally going to sell in retail. And with COVID, basically like all of our contracts kind of got like not canceled, but just like, hey, like we need to put this on the back burner right now. And we needed to figure out a way how to sell our inventory. So we changed our entire business model to be direct to consumer. And I think it was definitely a blessing in disguise, but at the time I would have never envisioned that we were a sunflower seed company that sold our product online.
Got it. Okay. Were you looking at like big convenience stores, like that kind of retailers was like where you're trying to get yourselves?
Yeah. I mean, like we're just starting out in the Minnesota, like Minneapolis area, kind of like the local chains of those types of stores.
Mm-hmm. Got it. Cool. And you, Brian, you mentioned that you guys have, you know, talked to potential investors and have had started to have those conversations. How has that gone from taking on money? Have you guys put your own money into it? What has that looked like sort of funding this thing to get it off the ground? Because I imagine, you know, purchasing sunflower seeds and seasonings and spices and doing the packaging, like that's not probably a cheap thing to do. So how have you handled some of the funding of the business?
Yeah, no, I could, when we started this, we both did not know how much it would cost to, do a manufacturing business. So you certainly have to be creative. We came out of COVID, so we took advantage of many, you know, loans and grant opportunities that were available. And yeah, you're always on the fundraising route. You know, we're always talking to new investors, looking to find the right partner. find the right deal. And yeah, it's
you kind of put some puzzle pieces.
You have to be creative. You know, we were strapped all through college. And then right when we graduated, we raised a very small round. And since then, we've just been sufficient. And you know, it's every inflection point, every, you know, growth phase. You need to find some new money, whether it's debt, whether it's equity.
Or your own, like, or your own. We can't afford that at this point.
Yeah, we're at the point where, you know, our personal money is not going to get us anywhere. So, but definitely, you know, when you're starting, you know, very small in your kitchen, you know, your personal money can get you to a pretty substantial next milestone.
Mm-hmm. And are you looking for like, okay, where I'm looking for one great investor who has worked in CPG before and who has an understanding of the, you know, snack space. And is that kind of how you're treating this? Are you like, all right, if I can go out and find 25 friends and family who are going to chip in a couple thousand bucks a piece, maybe that helps us get to our next phase. Like where are you at right now in thinking about like who you bring on board to help you build this thing?
Sure. Yeah. You know, we actually haven't, you know, it's pretty common, but we haven't done the friends family thing. We just went straight to angel investors. But yeah, when we're looking at a partner, whether it's, you know, a VC or an angel investor or what have you, we certainly want them to, you know, bring cash to the table and have a, you know, have a right deal, right valuation if it's a priced round. But yeah, no, we're definitely looking for synergy. And we've learned that, you know, choosing the right partner definitely, helps in the long run, because we've chosen right partners and we've chosen wrong partners. And so, you know, you definitely have to be mindful of, you know, what they bring to the table and, you know, what's all word and what's, you know, actual action that they'll implement.
Pass the money.
Yeah, but yeah, no, it's definitely, you know, we're looking for people that, you know, have experience in retail distribution, experience in, you know, consumer product, but, you know, that's not our narrow scope. You know, right now we're, you know, definitely big into marketing and, you know, online, you know, selling. So there's a lot of, partners that could, you know, bring certain things into to the table.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And this may be a naive question on my part, but like, what are you looking for next in raising more money? Like, what does that help you guys do to grow the business? Like where, if you were to be given $100 today, like where are you starting to put that money towards to help grow things?
Yeah. You know, our goals for, you know, the next couple of years, we're looking for retail next year. We'll be, looking for distribution, having a regional, presence on retail. You know, right now we're just only selling online, and a lot of the market obviously is in retail. So we definitely are looking to do that next year, and you know, over the coming years, just grow the retail touch points.
Yeah,
and hopefully be national and, you know, say,
continue to scale our e-commerce, to kind of build out the team, and also, like, you know, can't forget a lot of it has to go to just our COGS, because you know, so a manufacturing business at the end of the day, you have to make a product. It's not like a software where it's, you know, you kind of build it and you just make some small iterations to it. So you always have to have funds earmarked for that as well.
Is there, I guess, like talking about the finances of it a little bit, like, is there one of you guys who sort of is like, I'm the finance guy, handle the money. Like, how have you divvied up responsibilities between the two of you to manage this thing?
Yeah, I think we both, you know, came from respective functions in our, you know, college. He was really good at marketing. He graduated with a marketing degree. You know, I graduated with a finance degree. So I think from the beginning, we kind of knew, you know, where our strengths lied. But, you know, certainly we both, you know, are helping each other out in our areas, because, you know, everyone has unique perspectives to bring. Just because you have more knowledge doesn't mean you're going to see everything. So. He's the marketing and a lot of the marketing efforts and, you know, things that you see on social media. That's cool. And,
is there anyone else on the team, or is it just you two running the show?
No, we've kept it lean. It's just us, just the co-founders. You know, it's been tempting to bring people on, but, you know, at the end of the day, it's really not worthwhile. We'll probably look for our next hire or hires next year. But yeah, right now we're certainly able to run the show by ourselves.
And then I'm always interested in, like, how did you guys find your co-packer, or, you know, your, is that really the one relationship that you have, is sort of this like primary co-packer who helps you manage the literally the making and the packaging and all of that that goes into it? Or are there other hands involved in the pod as well?
Well, you have to factor in that. So you have to kind of build together your supply chain. So you have to figure out where all the different pieces of the pie come from, whether it be the packaging, the seeds, the seasoning, all the other aspects. Then you kind of need to bring that to co-packer, and then they manufacture and produce it for you.
Got
based
it.
On what you want to be done.
Do you have
it depends on the co-packer.
Co-packer, it's a very large spectrum of, you know, service and, you know, types of foods and, you know,
specialties or not specialties.
So co-packers come in all sorts of types, but, you know, and I can tell you, you know, we don't have the same partners that we did from the beginning, you know. You definitely go through transitions. You learn who's better, who is more, you know, a better fit for what you want to do. So
it can be hard finding the right fit right away.
Yeah, especially depending on your industry. You know, the sunflower
seed industry. And your size too. That can be a big restriction that we've run into.
Yeah, a lot of co-packers, you know, they'll have minimums. So they won't turn on their machines unless, say, you run a line of 10,000 units or, you know, whatever the...
100,000 or a million.
Yeah. And so that can be a big barrier to entry, especially for, you know, a very, you know, first starter, you know, even college kids, you know, you're not going to invest 10,000 to make a product that you can
make on demand in a commercial kitchen or.
Right.
You just haven't proven it yet to make it on that sort of scale.
Do you have a go-to sunflower seed supplier that you love?
At this point, yeah, we have pretty established suppliers. It takes time though to get to that.
Where do your sunflower seeds come from? Is there like a specific sunflower growing region?
Yeah,
most sunflower seeds are grown in the Dakotas and are from the Dakotas.
Learn something new every day. And how has it been for you guys as far as like either paying yourselves or, you know, is there part of this that you're at a point where you're turning a profit? You know, where are you guys feel like you're at? You're now, I think, 2+ years into, you know, running this thing. Like, how are you feeling as far as like making this something that's like sustainable for you to do full time?
Yeah, you know, we're both full time on it right now. You know, we've paid ourselves this year. This year actually was the first year that we started paying ourselves. So yeah, definitely, you know, before this year, you know, we were working for free and you kind of have to at the beginning. You know, I can tell you we're not making a fortune. You know, we run it lean and, you know, as you're always growing, you know, there's always cash to use somewhere else. So, Cole and I, you know, we take wages, but we don't take a lot and, definitely, you know, we won't until this thing's really big.
Yeah.
And I want to talk about TikTok a little bit, cause I feel like that is where I've obviously discovered you guys. I don't know how big of a driver it has been for your business, but obviously in terms of exposure has probably been great. You know, where have you seen the biggest source of your sales coming from? Is it coming through people that you're seeing that are seeing your TikToks that are coming through e-com that way? You know, how have you sort of built that marketing engine to get people in the door with you for the first time?
TikTok is a massive funnel for sure. It probably drives about 50% of our traffic. You know, obviously it comes in waves and, you know, some videos work, some don't. the other half is usually paid or just through kind of like other organic marketing efforts with influence, whatever it be. But TikTok is a big driver.
Yeah, and it's something that a lot of companies overlook or certainly struggle, you know, having viral like content. And so, yeah, we've definitely found that's kind of in our niche of, you know, core competencies as a marketing company, you know, and something that we saw in our industry is there's a lack of, you know, customer interaction and social media. And so TikTok was certainly a great channel for us to hop on and market to. to grow our brand awareness.
And is that specifically like in, when you're saying like in your industry, like in the sunflower seed space, like they're not exactly like timely, youthful, topical, culturally relevant brands?
No, it's it's run by the old guys. It's
some big conglomerates.
Yeah, so. it's a conglomerate. You know, it's the Pepsis, it's the Conagras of the world. So yeah, they're very out of touch, and it's they don't market much, if at all.
Yeah, it's a very uninnovative and kind of out of touch industry.
Mm-hmm. And Cole, I know you're kind of the face of the brand on TikTok. When you sort of set out, or was there any sort of, do you say, hey, I want to I'm going to get on TikTok and I'm going to sort of be the face of this and set out a strategy for what you were to do? Or did you just start get on and you were like, I'm going to just start making TikToks with our product and see where it goes from there?
Yeah. I don't really, to be frank, I don't really like having my face out there.
You're very soft spoken. I'm like, you see, you don't necessarily seem like the guy that would be on camera for everything, but you're good at it. You're great at it.
Thank you. But yeah, no, I remember we first tried TikTok back in November, December of 2019.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm absolutely terrible at it. Did not know what we were doing. And like throughout kind of like over the next year, we just would every once in a while, like put something up when like we thought like, oh, maybe this would be a good video.
Mm-hmm.
But finally, like last year in November, I put up one where I was like, you know, this, I was like, I feel like this is something that could finally work. And, you know, it, like in our eyes went viral, but it was only like 75,000 views,
mm-hmm.
but it like, we broke like our single sales day record or single day sales record. And, you know, drove like the most traffic we'd ever driven in one day. And we're like, oh my God, like this is something that can work, yeah. Scalable. So just kind of decided.
What was that? What was that first video? Like, what was like the theme of that?
It was like a 12-second video of like me standing in my bathroom saying, my business or my freshman roommate or like my college roommate and I started a sunflower seed business and
mm-hmm.
all the flavors. And then like, there's like showed a picture of the bedroom that we, or like our dorm, and I said like, toss a like and follow. And
it was,
you know, just kind of blew up. And and we just doubled down after that. And, you know, it's now quadrupled, you know, 5X, 6X, just kind of pump out as much content as we can on there.
Mm-hmm. And do you see, it sounds like that first instance was like an immediate, okay, this a successful video immediately equates to an increase in sales. Like, do you consistently see that if you have a video that really pops, that there's a direct correlation between like sales going up?
Typically, but sometimes there's videos that are not traffic drivers. Like, it mm-hmm. kind of depends on the video. Like, if it's like a clickbaity video that isn't really branded and doesn't, not that you need to be super branded, but like it doesn't develop like a connection with the person that's watching the video,
mm-hmm.
doesn't really drive traffic, doesn't really drive sales. But like whoever is sitting on their phone on TikTok watching it feels a connection to you, that's for sure, that's a money TikTok.
Mm-hmm. And how much time do you spend a day or a week building out videos, coming up with ideas, like, you know, developing the content to go on to TikTok?
A lot of my day. It's, you know, it's, you're constantly like, even if you're just sitting in bed, I'm scrolling through looking for like, oh, what's something that like, and you know, it's like, you're looking for inspiration. You're looking mm-hmm. for ideas that work, stuff that doesn't work. What's something that looked like it should have worked, but like there was a small error in it. And I could, you know, it's kind of like, you're constantly always looking for new ideas and filming and just working on content.
But mm-hmm.
it occupies a lot of my time for sure.
Yeah. How has it felt? Like, have you guys, you know, 50 something thousand followers on TikTok, like, do you feel like there is a community starting to form around Smackin'? Like, are there regular buyers that are coming in that are like, you know, re-upping every couple of weeks? Like, are you starting to see sort of this community build around the brand in some way?
Yeah,
no, I'd say so. Yeah, we definitely see it on the financial side, but you know, it's been cool just seeing it on the social side. People
like, you know, the same people joining our lives.
Yeah, join the live. They reach out in the DMs. You know, they leave comments, you know, often.
Post talking about us.
Yeah. That, you know, we see it. It's very cool. A lot of people are like, oh, you know, I was here for the first Mike Trout video, or I was here for the the first flavor or the first whatever that Smackin' did.
Or so. You get someone that says, oh, I was here before you blew up. And
yeah.
Yeah. There's a very consistent stream of like similar people commenting and messaging and whatnot every single time, which, and it grows every day. So it's cool.
So you like recognize like, oh, this is user 12345 that comments on every single thing that we do.
Yeah. Like there's like one kid that tries to comment first on like all of our videos or, you know, there's people you recognize for sure. Mm-hmm.
And what has like I was trying to guess what the audience would look like for a product like this, or would look like for following Smackin' on social. Like, who are the types of people that you're bringing in? Is it who's buying the product and who is following you guys?
Yeah. You know, our following demographics has changed as we've gone bigger. Starting out, it was about 60-30. So about 60% men, 30%, 40% girls.
I was going to say that doesn't add to 100. I was checking the math.
Hey, hey guys.
I thought you were the finance guy.
No, seriously. There's more than two genders. Now that we've gone to 50K, I think, what is it, like 90%,
Yeah, guys? I mean, our main demographic at this point has become like Gen Z males, which mm-hmm. like, it's going to change over time. Like, we kind of cornered ourselves for a minute just to grab some low-hanging fruit, for lack of better term, for following that kind of we felt aligned with our strategy and just mm-hmm. kind of where we are as a business right now. But our primary demographic overall is just Gen Z snackers.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And like on the sales side, maybe separate from the social, does it kind of mirror that in terms of like who's buying the product? Is it's, young 20 something guys that are mostly buying it?
Yeah. And then also like kids' parents buy it for them. Like it'll be like a 12-year-old baseball player's mom mm-hmm. buying it for him and his teammates or
yeah.
like that. Or like a grandma getting it, it's family members getting it as a gift to a kid that follows us.
Mm-hmm. That's cool. Like, is there maybe off of that a little, is it mostly in the, like I traditionally grew up playing baseball. I think of sunflower seeds as like, I would only have them at the baseball field. Like that was when I was having sunflower seeds, was playing baseball. Do you find that most of the like consumption is happening in and around baseball, or is it really everywhere? Or how are you feel about that piece of it?
I mean, I don't know. Like, I think that there's like, obviously kind of like I was saying earlier, low hanging fruit is baseball,
mm-hmm.
but there's people much outside of baseball that eat sunflower seeds, and it's a healthy snack. That's a superfood. That's tasty. And it's a good alternative to potato chips. We've seen that people our age notice that and are willing to eat it as just a normal snack.
Mm-hmm.
I think consumer trends are evolving and, the industry's marketing hasn't really adapted to that. It's part of what we're testing as a brand.
Yeah. I mean, people like to eat them outside. We get often comments, people say they're just eating them right now in their house. So our customers eat them anywhere. But yeah, certainly
fishing, gaming.
Yeah. Yeah. Certainly though, we've grabbed a good, portion of baseball. Mm-hmm. Customers.
And like, are you guys feeling like it started very much within your circles, friends and friends of friends, and has like evolved beyond that, or has evolved outside of Minnesota, or like, does it feel fairly national as far as where people are buying from? How has that piece evolved as you guys have grown larger?
Yeah. I mean, honestly, my personal, he might be on board as well. I feel like we've kind of always, been selling outside of the state. We're not the, Dots Pretzels where, we got really big around town and then eventually expanded mm-hmm. past that. We just from the get-go, we're selling to anyone, but mostly out of state, online. So mm-hmm. I'd say I feel like Smackin's really been, all across the country and outside the country.
Yeah. I mean, we've sold to someone in every single state.
That's cool.
Like multiple orders each state at this point, even like the Hawaii's, Alaska's, but we have customers everywhere. It's just even though like TikTok's relatively a geocentric app, our content gets pushed much outside of Minnesota.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned like other snack food brands. Are there any snack foods that brands that you truly like look up to, or you're like, oh, I wish someday we could be like them?
Absolutely. Like, oh, yeah. Yeah. We do that all the time.
It's, and it's hard to like not compare yourself to them because it's like, oh my gosh, like, you know.
Yeah. But, you know, we grab, you know, a lot of good ideas or a lot of things that we think we can implement in our business, you know, when we look outside. But, you know, one that comes to mind is Magic Spoon. They're a, you know, very, you know, it's a high protein direct to consumer cereal brand, not sold in stores. And they've done very well. And so there's a lot of things that we've taken, you know, notes from, whether it's their just direct to consumer model or, you know, their website or their, you know, just how marketing. Marketing. Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah, we've learned a lot. A couple other brands. You know, I'd say like a Dodge pretzel or, you know,
yeah,
I'm trying to think of something more.
Boom Chicka Pop. Yeah, Angie's, and like, also like we also learned from some failures too. Like lots of startups don't work. And obviously that happens in the food industry as well. And we've seen a few businesses that have, you know, started before our time, but have ended during our time or started and ending during our time. And I try to learn from those experiences as well.
Yeah, you know, Minneapolis is quite the food hub. So, you know, we've seen a lot, you know, around here in terms of CPG companies.
Have you guys like built relationships in the Minneapolis? Like, you know, how have you tapped into the community there to kind of help learn and grow? I think that's always something I like to ask any sort of entrepreneurs, like who are the people that you're leaning on to help learn from? Because obviously, you know, you guys are young kids, like still figuring this thing out. Like how have you sort of pulled knowledge from elsewhere to help you continue to build?
Yeah, you know, I'd say starting out, we definitely use the student card. You know, you just hop on LinkedIn and you you either search on an you know, a founder or you kind of already have a target in mind. And this is someone that you want to learn from, someone that's kind of, you know, walked the road before, has, you know, started, grown and sold a company in your space. And I'd say that's what we did the first you know, year and a half when we were still students is, you know, we, you know, met up with as many people in the area as we could, had phone calls, just kind of bouncing, you know, our idea off of them and kind of gathering, you know, advice on, you know, their expertise and experience.
Yeah. And hearing their stories as well is always very impactful, I think. And like, then there's always the constant, you know, you're always meeting new people. Like we're at an event yesterday, we're going to one tonight. Just meet other people in the area, meet people who are going through the same journey as you are. And yeah, I mean, it is like we always have been, and it obviously is going to change soon. I look forward to that day, but usually we're the youngest people in the room, which at first felt kind of weird, but I'd say we've adjusted to it now.
Yeah. I was going to ask, like, have you guys seen pushback on you being such young founders? Like, have people been like, nah, I'm not taking a call with you, or we're not talking because you're 22 years old.
Yeah, a lot of people are willing to listen, but yeah, when it comes down to, you know, having them put the money where you know, their mouth is, yeah, it's tough. It's tough to, you know, overcome the barrier that, hey, us being young actually, you know, is not a weakness. It's actually, you know, why we are doing so well in this business. So yeah, you just kind of have to turn it upside down. You know, that's a strength, but yeah, it's something that we've certainly have, you know, felt from investors or, you know, suppliers or what have you, that these kids are a little young.
Yeah. And like, sometimes I feel like people actually want to talk to us because we're a little bit younger. I mean, people like youth.
Yeah. This is kind of out of left field, but how did you guys land on the flavors that you launched with? Like, where did you launch? I think there was five and you guys are now up to six at this point now. Did you, how did those flavors come to be?
So we actually launched with three.
Three, okay.
And one of them we canceled like right away. just had to throw away that entire packaging. But, you know, we got samples from our seasoning supplier of a bunch of different flavors we were interested in testing out. And then basically whipped them up in our little kitchen and had people try them out. It got feedback and then kind of worked from there. We've just constantly been making small iterations to each of them, adding, taking away, and, you know, until we kind of always be innovating and coming up with new flavors.
Yeah. I mean, we were both, you know, play baseball all our lives and, you know, we kind of knew what new flavors and new twists on, you know, existing flavors that we wanted to see. So yeah, it was a combination of just, you know, gathering, you know, consumer feedback from our initial tests and also just kind of seeing what we want to see and putting in our own product.
This might be like picking your favorite kid, but do you both have a favorite flavor?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. But, you know, it also kind of, you know, it depends on the day. You know, you can catch me at a different time of the day. And
all right, gun to your head. You got to pick one flavor and the rest are gone. Which one are you picking?
You know, I'd say I changed actually overnight. Garlic Parmesan.
Oh, he just took mine.
Yeah.
So I guess that's what's sticking around. You know,
the garlic parm is the hero. Yeah.
Usually I'd say Sriracha honey, but, you know, we've recently made some giant strides and, our garlic Parmesan that, you know, hasn't reached the public yet, but now I've tasted it. So I can say it's, garlic Parm is my favorite now.
It's the new favorite.
Yeah.
Yeah. What? Our next iteration of our product is going to be, not that it's bad at all right now, but the next iteration is killer.
What, and like, what do you do between, like, what are those iterations? What do those look like? Is it changing the amount of seasoning? Is it different type of seeds? Like what goes into a product improvement type of thing like that?
It's everything you said and even more.
Okay.
Yeah. It's levels of seasoning. What goes into the seasoning? How big are the seeds? How are we adhering the seasoning to the seeds?
Who suppliers, you know, each, mm-hmm. not each, you know, we've changed suppliers, you know, each time we have a new inventory, sometimes we have a new supplier.
And that can be a variable as well as improving or, you know, yeah. So it's always, there's so many factors that go into a iteration or a new iteration.
And yeah. And even just small things on packaging, I can tell you right when we, you know, printed and had thrown together our newest inventory, there's, you know, lots of things we changed right off the bat, but mm-hmm. That's just how it always is,
especially at an early stage business.
Yeah. Is there a style that is like the best selling SKU as well? Or do you find it's fairly, again, that changes too?
I mean, like our top selling SKU is our variety pack just because everyone wants to try all the flavors, mm-hmm. but like the visual SKU, I would say is garlic parm.
Yep. Garlic and sriracha. So yeah.
Honestly, like as from objective as I can be, like those, if I was an outsider looking in, like sriracha, just, I've never heard of like either of those flavors of sunflower seeds.
Yeah. I was going to say, are there like, do those even exist? Are there any other competitors that you know of that even have something like that?
No, that's it. Like there's nothing, there's no sriracha honey. There's no garlic Parmesan. And mm-hmm. there's like,
definitely like the most unique. Yeah. I'd say, you know, kick and dill is something that is, you know, mm-hmm. definitely something unique. But you know, it's, I would not have expected to be a top seller because you know, it's just dill. It's, you know, you corner yourself into a smaller segment with that flavor.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. It's not something that's as probably like even widely recognizable or known anyways.
But exactly. When people like it, they like,
yeah. So you can buy individual styles or like most people just do it in the variety pack.
Most,
like, a majority. First, yeah. A majority would be a variety pack, especially a first time buyer is usually a variety pack.
Like moving forward in the future, like right now it's, you can get the variety pack in a 6-pack or a 12-pack, or you can get each individual flavor in a 6-pack or 12-pack, which I think like, you know, in the future, kind of once we're able to handle it, we'll be able to, you can customize your own 6-pack, like mm-hmm. if you want 3 barbecues, 3 srirachas, whatever it be, which I think that'll kind of create some variable into what people order as well.
That's cool. We've talked a little bit about the future and, you know, kind of ambiguously, like what are some of the big plans for you guys to grow the business, or like, you know, what does the next 1 year, 3 years, 5 years, 10 years start to look like for Smackin'?
Well, we want to be the snack company of Gen Z. So obviously that's a very, very large picture, but, you know, it starts with sunflower seeds and we're going to win at sunflower seeds. And you just grow from there.
I was wondering that, like in the name you guys have, it's not Smackin' sunflower seeds specifically. It's Smackin' snacks is the, like there's more coming next is the idea.
Certainly is.
Mm-hmm. And can't spread yourself too thin right out of the gate.
Yeah. And is there one or two things that you're like, this is, you know, this is a space, an avenue I want to explore yet that you can say?
I'm not going to give in to any of the products that we'd like to move into, but a branch of our business moving forward will certainly be media involved.
Mm-hmm.
Always going to be connected to the consumer and creating a more holistic customer journey that none of our other competitors do.
That's awesome. And like in the media space, is that just building out more content, trying to, like, you know, do longer form stuff, do more partnership things? Like, where are the spaces that you think, like, you guys, you have such a knack within the, within TikTok, like, where else do you see you're taking your media?
Yeah. I mean, TikTok will always, as long as it's around, be a part of it. But, you know, like you said earlier, Smack the Gorilla, you know, he's going to be a big part of our brand moving forward. You know, collaborations with other people in the space, growing on YouTube, just kind of releasing like shorts and films that are related to our brand that people can enjoy that, you know, just, you know, we're a business that sells food and also has other entertainment for our customers.
All right. I like that. And do you see, like, maybe this is too far off in the grand scheme, but do you want to keep it domestic? You want to keep it to the US, or you'd want to be an international company someday selling all over the world?
We want to win.
Yeah. Yeah. I like that answer, man. That I was going to say something, but I don't even want to win. I like, I mean, there's a lot that goes into, you know, being an international. I mean, we sell international, but not fully. It's just very select. I can tell you, overseas is a lot bigger market for sunflower seeds than domestically. It's really dependent on, you know, where we are at that time. You know, say we get national in the sunflower seed brand, sunflower seed industry. We could jump overseas, or we could, you know, do more product extensions or, you know, different product. I don't know. Yeah. It's just something that, you know, a strategy that will kind of develop over time. And you know, you kind of learn as you grow.
Yeah. Okay. I play this game sometimes on the show. Explain it to me like I'm five. And I don't know if you guys have an answer to this, but why is the nut category in general, and I can't say I've bought sunflower seeds in a long time, but why is the nut category so seemingly expensive compared to like other snack foods?
Oh, that's a good question that, quite frankly, I don't know the answer to.
Yeah, I mean, you're talking to the guys that we saw one of the least expensive.
Yeah, it's true. It's true. Yeah.
The cheapest.
Like, you go to buy a bag of almonds and it's going to cost you $20 to buy like a big bag of almonds.
Or labor, honestly.
It's just how it's grown and the supply chain. If we sold pistachios, I would probably have a better answer for that. But sunflower seeds, it's definitely a you know, a commoditized, you know, and very large industry, very competitive industry, you know, for the farmer side. So, it's not hard for us on the supply side and pricing.
Yeah. Okay. Oh, these are my, yeah. These.
I don't know. They're high in fat, you know, high in nutrition. I don't.
I don't even, I mean, to think about it, I don't even know how peanuts are. I think maybe they're like, I don't know. I don't even know how they're grown. Like sunflower seeds, like I know they come out of the sunflowers.
We're gonna embarrass ourselves if we start talking about other nuts.
All right, we won't get too deep. You know, you guys have long. Once you start getting into pistachios or peanuts, you give me a call. We'll get this thing answered. But for now, we'll stick to this. All right, so I got to cut just a couple like rapid fire questions to close you out here. If you had a billboard in Times Square for Smack and Sunflower Seeds, what are you putting on it?
I'm putting our animation of Smack the Gorilla.
Same thing. Him doing something
insane in New York Times or in Times Square.
Yeah.
And what does it say? Does it say, is there any words on there? Is it just a gorilla that says buy my sunflower seeds?
If you go on our Instagram, like I think the second post in our feed is what I would put. And it's like it's a short film. It's like 13 seconds long of a pitcher, like having a bat against Smack the Gorilla. And he pitches a bag of like the new flavor we were launching, the OG. It's a really cool short form cartoon. And then he hits a home run with it. And all the other sunflower seed bags appear in our logo. And yeah.
All right. I like that. Brian, any different answer? Are you sticking with that too?
No, I stick to, you know, my marketing guy, and that's what he says. I like it.
All right. I like that. I like that business relationship. What has been the hardest or most surprising thing about starting a sunflower seed business for you guys?
That you don't figure it out right away and that it takes time. I mean, when we started, like, I guess I had no idea where we would be 2 years from now, but I definitely didn't think it was where we are now. Not that what we've done isn't awesome and fantastic. But just kind of understanding the concept of understanding that you have to enjoy the process more than the results sometime.
Anything? Yeah.
I'd just say, you know, how hard it is. You know, it's, there's a lot that goes into it. It takes twice or triple the amount of time that you would think on anything because you're doing it for the first time. Everything that we did, whether it is, you know, building the product, you know, selling it, building the website, you know, raising capital, what have you, all of that, you know, our first time around. So you kind of have to learn as you go. I just never expected how hard it would be to, you know, build a company. And I mean, it sounds hard, but, you know, you don't realize how hard it is until you're actually doing it. Mm-hmm. Like a marathon sounds really hard. I haven't run a marathon, but I'm sure it's going to be harder, you know, as I'm running it, you know, mm-hmm. than it sounds.
Has there been one big fuck up or mistake that stands out across the whole journey so far? Is there any one mistake that really
there's an answer on? The answer is that there's too many.
Okay. A couple that definitely come to mind, unfortunately I don't think we can say it.
Yeah.
But yeah, like I said, you're learning.
You can't say because like of
just like I don't know if I want the public knowing like
there's some things that, you know, I just, you keep private about your business, but yeah, you know, you
nothing like up. Deathly or anything. It's, you know, no, just no, like yeah, embarrassing.
We're
like,
certified. Oh. We're food yeah. safety. Everything's fine. It's just you know, going back. Well, yeah, we would have done it better.
Like, wow, what a waste of money here, or what a waste of our energy towards this. And like, oh my God, the answer was right in front of us, but we were looking 10 miles other direction.
Mm-hmm.
And it happens every day.
All right. I can live with that. And then my last question. So I sign off every episode of this show with the sign off of stay weird. So you both have to answer what makes you weird.
You know, honestly, probably, like, I don't give a fuck.
Yeah.
Yeah. And
I think it's the same thing for
me.
Like,
we're both kind of odd weirdos. Like, we had lots of friends in college. We had, you know, a lot of fun in college, but we definitely don't like to be, you know, mainstream. We don't like to follow the crowd.
Yeah. We go against the grain and it's fun.
Is a wrap on this week's episode of Destination Different. Big shout out to Brian and Cole, the two running the show at Smack and Snacks. It just goes to show that there is a business in just about anything, and these guys have turned sunflower seeds into a full-time gig for the both of them right out of college. They are so damn impressive, so wise beyond their years, and just were a delight to talk to. I'm excited to watch them keep building this thing and take it, you know, outside of sunflower seeds, take it into other snack categories to build out the media end of their business. I think there's just so much ahead for these guys, and they're still so, so young that smacking can only go up. So huge thanks to them. We'll make sure we get everything linked up in the description, their TikTok, their Instagram, where you can go buy smacking sunflower seeds. Six different flavors now. And you can get your hands on all of them. That's all we got for this week. I am starting, what's today? September 22nd. I am starting on September 23rd, a 100-day challenge. That means there are 100 days left in the year from September 23rd to December 31st. And I'm going to up my content game. I'm trying to produce a piece of content every single day. I'm going to try and get to that 10,000 listen number that we set out at the beginning of 2021. 100 days left to crush it for the remainder of the year. It's time to get after it. That's simple as that. We've got a couple other great guests lined up over the next few weeks, so I hope you tune in again when we're back again next Wednesday. That's it. That's a wrap. We will talk to you soon. As always, I leave you with this. Stay weird. Me
superpowers. We fell in love for just a couple hours. I can't tell the difference between what's fake and what's been missing. Often I'm misunderstood, so I'm looking for a better me. This is your love song, baby. I hope that you know the words.